Who was your motorcycling hero growing up?
Valentino Rossi. I rode bikes from 3.5 years old. Like, I rode a motorbike with no stabilizers before I rode a push bike with no stabilizers. I spent a lot of time in the garage with my dad, just sitting on his bikes and revving it. I loved it, you know. I was always with my dad in the garage doing stuff with bikes, and as soon as I could ride them, I did. I think I would absolutely love it. I'm a professional and we ride once every 2 weeks. Like, I don't know another sport in the world when you're a professional and you've got to go out and perform at your highest level once every 2 weeks.
True or false, Ryan Vickers wears ladies' knickers?
False.
Hello there and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, celebrating all things we love about being on two wheels. Now, Full Chat is powered by Bikesure. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, Bikesure will tailor a quote to your exact needs, helping you save money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance.
Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from.
Right, we've got a belter of a guest for you this week. This is a young man who is one of the country's top motorcycle racers. He's been riding bikes probably since the time he could walk. He is now riding for Honda. He's the grand age of 27 prats. He's still so young. He races for Honda Racing in the British Superbike Series. It is, of course, the brilliant Ryan Vickers.
How's it going, everyone? It's great to be here. Absolutely fantastic to come on this podcast. I've looked up to it. I've seen a lot of things, a lot of cool things going on, and it's a great pleasure to join you guys today. Hopefully give you guys a little bit of insight of what I get up to.
The pressure's on, Prats. He likes the podcast. We're gonna have to deliver.
And I think and this, with due respect to everyone that's been on, I think we found our most polite guest ever so far. So, Ryan, thank you very much. Obviously, going into this and working out the way we want to talk to you, as you say, you've got so much to tell us. We want to get stuck into it all. Wikipedia is obviously a good place to start. And sometimes you've got to take stuff on there with a pinch of salt, but there's a line on there which says about you becoming interested in motorsports when your dad finished fourth in the world wheelie competition.
Yeah,
is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. And everyone asked me, where did it come from? Like, do you have any like races in your family or anything like that? And I'm like, no, it's like my dad was just good at wheeling motorbikes. Like, he's 60s, basically, well, coming up
still
to 60
doing it
now. And he's still on a motorbike, and honestly, he's still amazing at wheeling and stuff like that. So he did actually go into a competitive side, and when they did the World Wheelie Competition on a standard CBR 1000 Fireblade, what I'm actually riding now, when that was in probably 2004, 2005, something like that. Other people were on turbocharged bikes, everything, and he finished fourth. So, yeah, that was
Where nice. Does this happen? I mean,
that was at Elverdon. Elverdon.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I think Elverdon is actually in Suffolk, and I was based in Norfolk, so a very local airfield to where we used to live. And I remember as a kid, I went there, and I was on my little bicycle at like 4 or 5 years old at the time, and I was wheeling around the pits, and he was out there on his 1000 Fireblade doing the wheelie competition. So that's where I think my love for bikes has come from. You know, that's where it started.
What Ryan forgets to tell us is his dad is Evel Knievel.
Yeah, basically.
Literally.
Yeah.
Genuinely, I mean, I think we all look up to our dads for different reasons. Like, you know, oh, I love my dad, used to do this or that. He's my hero. But your dad is a real life hero. I mean, to have a dad who rides a blade on one wheel. That is unbelievable. Surely you were always destined to become a bike racer or to do with bikes. And if that's your role model, that's a great role model to have.
100%. I mean, I rode bikes from 3.5 years old. Like, I rode a motorbike with no stabilizers before I rode a push bike with no stabilizers. Like, I don't know what dad in the world would send their kid on a motorbike with no stabilizers before they'd done it on a push bike. Like,
a good dad.
Yeah, exactly.
A good dad. That's what kind of dad that is.
It was just one of those things that my first motorbike actually was my brother's. My brother didn't use it, didn't have that passion the same as me. He went out on it every now and again, and it just sat in the garage. And then when I came along, I spent a lot of time in the garage with my dad, just sitting on his bikes and revving it. I loved it, you know. I was a I was always with my dad in the garage doing stuff with bikes, and as soon as I could ride them, I did.
That's the instant thing I'm getting, Ryan, from what you're talking about, that real family feel to what you're doing. So the dream was always then to make a career out of riding a motorcycle. Was there anything at all else in your brain space?
Well, it's difficult. To be honest, when you're in that space and you're doing it because you love it, there's never a point really you think about making that dream a reality or making it your job. It's, you know, you're just going because, you know, your parents want to see your kid do what they love to do. And whether that be football, whether that be golf, whatever it is, you know, the parents always try to make that happen for their kids. And that's what we was doing for a very long time, until we sort of realized that, you know, we've got some good potential, you know, and then it's about trying to make it happen. And without my family, I wouldn't have been able to do that. You know, it was difficult. It was growing up, I didn't have massive financial backing, and with a bit of luck and a lot of local support, we managed to put it together, you know.
I think it's beautiful in life where it doesn't ever feel like a job. You just do something you love doing, you get better and better, until one day the realization hits you, hang on, I'm on the grid here at British Superbikes, I must be pretty good. You mentioned the local support there, you didn't have massive financial backing, but what did the village feel like then? I'm assuming your dad's pretty well known around where you live because of his antics on the bike, and then you take up biking, and then all of a sudden you're very good at it. Do you feel that sense of pride from the community and from your family, the fact that you've done so well?
Massive. You know, we grew up on a small like council estate, and, you know, it was all of my dad's friends that he used to grow up motorbike racing. They used to go to the Nürburgring every year. And because obviously my dad was well known with the motorbikes and everything, that honestly, the support from the local town that I've got still now is huge, you know, and everybody got behind me. It was great. You know, still some of my best friends now and still some of my best supporters, you know, they're just through and through just want to see me do well. And, you know, without that support, I wouldn't be in this opportunity now for sure, because whether that, you know, that backing from the local community got me sponsors, got people talking, you know, that's what happens. People get word about, you know, there's this kid that's good on a bike, and people then that have the money can invest and help out, you know. And fortunately, we met some really generous people that are still, quite a lot of them, my sponsors today, that still help me out and really kickstarted my career off from an early age. And that's down to my dad, you know, having a lot of friends and being, you know, well known in the biking industry.
Given British bike racing, I mean, we talk about it a lot on this podcast. Scott Redding's been on, Hickey, David Todd, John McGuinness, Carl Fogarty, we've had the pleasure of as well. One thing that does come up is that there hasn't been a British rider in MotoGP since Carl Crutchlow 5 years ago. How does that change? Being in the position that you're in, Ryan, and knowing what the profession is like, what the industry is like, how does that, firstly, why do you think that is the reason? And how does that then change to compete with the likes of Spain and Italy in that particular competition?
Yeah, it's not an easy one to answer, if I'm honest. It's not easy. I think, you know, Cal did an amazing job. I think a lot of riders, you know, like even Johnny Ray and people like that, they should have gone to MotoGP at some point in their career. But it's all in this job, it's all about opportunity. And if you don't get the right opportunity, it's not worth going as such. And I don't know why, but the Spanish, Italians and stuff like that, they seem to land on the right opportunity to be able to get in. And I think there's a massive thing with nationality, with all of that, you know, being now in Europe and whatever else is. It's, I don't know. I think there's a lot of backing from the countries as well. I moved to Italy for a year last year, and speaking to quite a lot of professionals, even one of the trials riders, Mattia Grattarola, one of the best trials riders in the world, he actually has like a sponsorship from the Guardia, from the police. And they pay for 100% of all of his training expenses, all of his, like, his personal trainer that goes with him, his mentor guy, They pay for all of his expenses. And that's the same for quite a lot of motorsport athletes. You know, they can be sponsored by the Guardia, by the police, by the local government. And that pays for their training expenses. And, you know, the Spanish, the Italians, they start at such a young age.
Mm.
We can't ride on a full circuit until we're 12 years old. You know, they're doing stuff at 6, 7, you know.
Yeah, right. Is that a cultural thing then, or just quite simply a professional, a different professional approach to it? Because I've only ever, it's listening to this side of what the industry is absolutely fascinating. Ewan's known a life as an athlete. I've known a life as a footballer. And obviously you can have a kick around with your mates in the backyard from the minute you can stand up.
Exactly.
I'm not simplifying what Ewan did winning medals internationally, but you can pretty much go running as and when you need to, whenever you need to. Whereas with you, that point of entry that seems to be encouraging in Spain or Italy, it feels like there's a barrier first to get over.
100%. It's so difficult to, like, even now, I'm a professional and we ride once every 2 weeks.
Mm.
Like, I don't know another sport in the world when you're a professional and you've got to go out and perform at your highest level once every 2 weeks and you don't get to practice between. And that's so crazy. Hard for me to explain. That's one thing I don't like about the job, but that's also the thing that when I go to Spain, most British riders, they go to Spain every winter to train because the circuits are open every day of the week. And when you're there training, the kids, they go to, like, instead of going to after school football club, they go to after school motorbike club. Mm-hmm. And they're all there at 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night. The tracks are open. They're out there. They're riding around cones. They're doing drills. It, like, that is like part of their PE, like it is in school for us, like doing football and whatever else and all these things. It's accessible. Whereas in the UK, it's not so accessible. And I think that is because of a government thing. Because if you was to go to most schools, the only way that they're going to get motorbikes put into their curriculum of sports exercise is by the government allowing it.
Mm.
And in Spain and Italy and places like that, the government, there's motorbike racing is one of their biggest sports, you know, alongside football. It's probably looked up to as very similar, whereas in this country it's not. So it's not a priority, and that's the problem. Is when you Brits are always late. You look at all of the riders that have been in MotoGP that are British riders. They're always of the older generation because it takes us longer to get there because we start later.
Yeah,
maybe we need to get a message to Keir Starmer. There's a lot of trouble in this country. You need to sort the government out, but we need more chances for motorbike riders like Ryan. I mean, bearing that in mind, I know you've dabbled with World Superbikes. You said you moved to Italy for a bit. Do you think the only way really for your path to lead you to MotoGP in that case is to go to the continent, is to go abroad? And, you know, it's horrible saying that, but it's a tough path you've chosen in the UK.
It would be the way to do it. But, you know, me growing up, we didn't have the money to do that, you know, and it was only... Only now that, you know, you get paid to race and stuff like that, I can go to Spain for, you know, a few weeks in the winter and do a bit of training. But it's even too late now for that for me, because I'm kind of at a point in my career now where, like, BSB and World Superbike is like where I'll be. You know, I won't get the opportunity to go to MotoGP now because I'm too old, honestly. And that's the thing. It's like I needed that when I was, you know, 6, 7 years old. And to do that when you're 6 and 7 years old, when your parents are working, it's so difficult for them to be able to facilitate sending their kid abroad at that age with somebody that they trust, with the money to be able to keep it all afloat. It's nearly impossible. You know, it's not an easy thing. That's why it needs to kind of be on your doorstep, really. I mean, Scott Redding was a British MotoGP rider, and he was the sort of first British rider, I would have said, to really take on that Spanish kind of training route. And Scott did a great job. But again, I think there's some thoughts from him, if you speak to him, that riders like Marc Márquez, because of the Spanish backing, Repsol, people like that, that are Spanish companies, got him into a factory MotoGP team on his first year, whereas Scott went into a satellite team, struggled for many, many years, and never made it happen. Whereas Scott and Marquez in the Moto2 championship, where they were on a level playing field, were battling quite equally.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. When he got that opportunity, maybe Marc Márquez is a better rider. I think so. But could Scott Redding be of won a MotoGP World Championship if he got the same opportunity? Probably.
It's tough, isn't it, Prost? Because clearly the talent, like with Ryan and the other riders you've spoken to, the talent is there in this country. It's just
and the passion and the desire and the ambition.
You're coming up against that brick wall, though, aren't you? The barrier. Whereas other countries, the floodgates are open. Come on, from a young age. It's tough, but, you know, let's be honest, though, you're still living 99.9% of the population's dream who ride a bike would love to do what you do for a living. So I know it's tough, but, you know, you should still be immensely proud of where you're at.
Even me looking at it now, it's like, you know, I can't change what's happened with me. I'm happy with where I'm at. But I'd like to see it change for the future generations because I can't see how a British rider is going to be able to be successful at the same time, you know, with the way it's going with all of these Italians and Spanish, and the way that they're coming through the championships. You know, there's people that are potentially going to be on the MotoGP grid next year that are, you know, 20, 21 years old. They're already two times world champion. You know, they've won the Moto3 World Championship. They're probably going to win the Moto2 Championship this year. And they're going to be on a MotoGP bike by the age of 21, like Pedro Acosta. And it's like, I can't think of anyone in British that is going to be anywhere near two times world champion by the age of 21. It's impossible.
Well, it was quite, not a stark thing to say, but a sobering thing to say about being 27 and being too old. That's
exactly
mind-blowing. Absolutely mind-blowing. That
it's crazy. And I've said that for the last 5 years as well, you know, like of where we was at. I remember at a point in my career, the sort of idea would have been, I went to the British Superbikes in 2019 and our goal was to try and to be successful in British Superbikes maybe a little bit earlier and then going to Moto2. But even when I was 22 years old and we was potentially looking at going to Moto2, we're too old. So, because you've got to look at it as in the sense of, you've got, let's say, five riders that are a very similar amount of talent that are unproven on a Moto2 bike. You've got one that's 22 and you've got four that are 17. Who are you going to choose when all of their levels at this point are equal because no one's proven themselves yet? So who are you going to choose if you're a team owner? You know, if you're going to go for the younger one because you can sign them on a 4 or 5 year contract and develop them through.
It's both fascinating and frustrating to hear it from the horse's mouth there, Ryan, given the position that you find yourselves. I mean, the one caveat that I would say, just wait till you're 55 like Ewan. A quick bit of mid-show housekeeping, folks. If you haven't already, please press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from. Given what your career is and where you've been and the kind of ambition that goes with it, Ryan, you've been to the Isle of Man TT. Have you fancied competing there at the North West, or is it a different, and this is, when I use the term, is that a different level of nuts? I'm not saying for 1 second you don't have what it takes physically and mentally to do it. It feels and looks like a slightly different mindset. Would that be correct?
Yeah, it is. It's a different sport. That's the easiest way of putting it. It's a
great way of putting
sport.
It. Yeah.
It honestly is. It's got its own nature, and I think it's really got to be embedded into you. And honestly, I think I would absolutely love it.
Given the kind of physicality that goes into riding the bikes that you do to the absolute limit, What's and you say, yeah, you've got a couple of weeks in between each race. So mentally, you've got to go through the gears up and down to manage, I presume, your adrenaline and getting yourself into race mode. But from a physical point of view, a fitness point of view, what does your week, what does your fortnight look like? I presume you look super fit. I presume you are super fit. I presume you have a lot of stuff that keeps you fit.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. I've got to train in different aspects to keep myself fit because I'm not riding a motorbike. Mm. But I ride other aspects of motorbikes. So, you know, my day, normally I go start off in the morning, I go and do some cardio, whether that be cycling, running. To be honest, at the moment, I'm doing a lot of running. Injured my back a little bit, and actually running's better for it. So I'm doing a lot of running. I go running in the mornings. And then I'll be gym in the evening, strength stuff and whatever else, some intervals and all of that. And then that's every day. And then on the weekends, when I get to the weekends, I decide whether or not I'm going to go out on a bike, and that'll be either flat track or motocross. But I normally do a day, one of each, really.
Is that building, or broadening out that skill set? Because I suppose, again, if you look at people that are into motorbikes, there'd be a presumption that, well, it's got two wheels, gears and a throttle, it's the same thing. But the muscle memory that comes from different things, does that round out what you can do on a bike?
Yeah, I think there's nothing that's transferable to a superbike from motocross or flat track as such. But for me, it's fine-tuning, it's your coordination. It's the same as anything. You know, if you just try catching a ball, if you catch a ball 100 times, you're going to get better at catching a ball. And it's a reaction that your body gets used to, and controlling a bike with a throttle and gears and clutch and maneuvering a bike and constantly making fine adjustments to it with your body, keeping your brain as well. It's the focus within your brain, you know, because I can't tell you the focus that you go through when you're in a motorbike race. It's so weird, you know. I've seen heart rates up to 215 beats per minute when I'm racing my bike, and it does not matter what fitness test, what I do, I'd be dead on the floor, you know. I would pass out way before that point, you know. I think the maximum I've ever seen on a fitness test is like 196, and that's like I'm done, you know. So it's a real strange thing of where you get really locked in mentally. And that's what I use motocross and flat track to do, because you get that same vision. You know, you go into this like vision where you're completely in a different world, where you are training your focus, you know, and keeping that mental focus for a period of time. And I try to do that for the period of time of what a race distance is, and do that 3, 4, 5 times, you know. So it's a simulation.
It's a really interesting point you make, because a lot of people would assume, yeah, 2 weeks in between races, keep yourself ticking over, keep yourself physically fit, but it's not. You're keeping yourself mentally sharp, because if you're not 100% ready when you start that race, mentally as well, it's that concentration, like you said. But that leads me to the question I find fascinating is BSB weekend. There's a lot of adrenaline, you know, throughout the whole weekend, racing, so forth, getting the bike ready, feeling ready. What's easier, falling asleep the night before the race or the night after? Because I'm assuming it must be so hard to sleep the night after a race, because you must be wired.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, and you can tell that you've asked that question from experience, and you know these sorts of things from yourself. It's an interesting question. The Thursday night, so we start on Friday, practice is Friday, Saturday, Sunday, race. The Thursday night is the worst night for me, of the anticipation of actually not knowing how the weekend's going to go and how the bike's going to feel and what, you know, and where you're going to be. I don't know how the lie's going to land. I don't know. So that Thursday night before the race weekend is the hardest night's sleep for me, because you've got all of these sort of scenarios going through your head of how could it go and what you would like it to happen and what, you know, all of these things. But then after that, I'm absolutely fine. And then I would say the next night's sleep that's the worst is the one after, because it's either gone how you want it to or it's not. But definitely the Thursday night is the hardest one for me. And then second to that is the Sunday night.
Do you, and this is what fascinates me about top level sports people and having the kind of privilege that I do working in and around football to speak to top players and top managers, the question that it always comes back to, and I'm sure it's the approach that we all, or the reason we all get into these different professions, because as kids, it's something that we love. So given where you are, Ryan, in your career, what you've done in your career, what you do on in and around race season, and you talk about the mental preparation, all the physicality that goes into it, the trepidation, as you mentioned, on that Thursday night, wondering how the weekend's going to go. Do you still sit there on the bike and just think, I absolutely... Have you got time to think how much you love it when you're doing it, or is it pure concentration?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's difficult, you know. It depends on the times, you know. You'll know as well, like, it gets to a point where, you know, all you want to do is win, you know. And honestly...
And it's your job, isn't it? I mean, to some extent, but it's your profession, it's your job. That's the other part about it. It, to put it in blunt terms, it pays for stuff. It generates income. You're in it.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You have to be good at that. Yeah,
exactly. But I mean, some people, even through like when you're growing up as a kid, some people are there because they enjoy it and they just want to have fun. But I've never had that. Like I've always been driven to win. Like my first ever race that I ever did, I won. And I think it might have happened from that point that I just needed to keep winning. And it sounds bad, but when I'm not winning, I am not enjoying it. Like, and it is, I hate it. Like, even when you're having a tough season, it's like, it's so annoying. But that motivates me a lot to then make it work, you know, and change whatever we need to change to make it, to get us back to where we need to be. But, you know, it gets to a point where once you've won and you've felt that feeling, you never want to lose that. And once you've had it, you can't be happy or content with anything less. Because once you've had that winning feeling, there's nothing that beats it.
It's a drug. What you're describing is you're a winner in life, and you've got that switch where you need to win. And like,
you need
it's all very well people who, it's all about taking part. No, it's not.
No.
Yeah, it's nice to get paid for what you love doing, but there's no better feeling than coming through that finish line first, knowing you've beaten everyone. You're the best. And it's a buzz.
There's that very old school take on it, which is show me a good loser and I'll show you a loser. That's I can't remember which very successful and quite blunt person said that, but there is an element of what that is. I mean, in the interests of being competitive and winning, Ryan Vickers, we've got a quick fire question round now. So I'll be so intrigued to see how you attack this, because it's great. It's utterly frivolous and silly. Just tell us what comes into your head first. You've got a minute, quick fire, as many answers to these questions as possible. No right or wrong answers. Just be quick, which we know you are very quick. So I'm going to put 60 seconds on the clock, and myself and Ewan will alternate firing these questions at you. Say whatever comes into your head first. So, if you're sitting comfortably, Ryan Vickers, are you ready?
Ready.
3, 2, 1, go, Ewan.
Who was your motorcycling hero growing up?
Valentino Rossi.
What posters did you have on your bedroom wall?
James Stewart.
True or false, Ryan Vickers wears ladies' knickers?
False.
Who would play you in BSB the movie?
Leon Aslam.
Favourite short circuit?
Donington Park.
Least favourite circuit?
Alton Park.
Italian bikes or Japanese bikes?
Got to say Japanese.
Who's your biggest supporter?
My dad.
What music do you listen to before a race?
Rock.
Best flavour of crisps?
Salt and vinegar.
Favourite breed of dog?
Labrador.
Red sauce or brown sauce on a bacon sandwich?
Red.
Time's up. Wowzers.
Out at the end there. I got a bit stuck on like the bedroom wall one, didn't I?
Well, at least you didn't get stuck imagining you wearing ladies' knickers. I'm glad you got through that one.
I thought that was one that he was expecting me to say yes to. But...
Yeah. I mean, that would have been a great curve, Bob. Yeah.
Only at the weekends. Yeah. Only on race day. Yeah.
And definitely not on a bike. Right. That was a score of 11, Ryan. Well done,
11.
Mate.
Pretty decent. Not bad
good
at
job,
all.
Guys.
Right. Ryan, it is time for the final question. Now, this is one I want you to take your mind to a wonderful place because we want to know your fantasy ride. So, where would you ride in the world? What bike would you be riding? Who would you be with, if anybody? And what music would you listen to? So you could be anywhere in the world on any bike. Where would you go? It could be a circuit. It could be a road. Your choice. This is your fantasy.
Yeah, I like that question. I don't know. I'll go through like mountain road through the Swiss Alps. On old two strokes.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'd go old two strokes with my dad, my brother, Roger Burnett, Roger Marshall.
Oh, I love Roger Burnett.
Love this.
And I don't know, I'm just trying to think of the most pretty woman I can think of.
just get yourself some brownie points. Say your mum. Just say you're going to take your mum.
Nah,
with you
Megan
as well.
Fox.
Keep her happy.
Perfect.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Let's be honest. Done. She's going to win.
Perfect. And,
any music? Would you have a soundtrack? Any music or no music?
Yeah, probably. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of like I'm picturing like a sunset ride through the Swiss Alps.
Nice. I was just picturing Megan Fox, but that's a different thing.
Yeah, exactly. I know. It's lost my train of thought.
I don't know what that says about me. I was picturing an old two-stroke. It doesn't have to be music. The bikes, the engines, that's the music.
Just peace and quiet. Yeah, peace and quiet. I like that.
With that many people, though.
Be quite good, yeah. I think it'd be an experience for everyone to see Megan Fox there, so.
This is a good fantasy ride. I'm liking that.
Perfect, I'm happy with that. That's great.
We get so many different takes on that, and that's one of the most unique, I think, Ewan, isn't it, that we've heard?
100%.
I think the only other one that I would do would be a golfing thing. Would be walking down Augusta Fairways with Tiger Woods, my mum, my dad, my brother, and the two Rogers. Like, as an experience. At
that would be an
National.
Experience, but hang on a minute. That's not a fantasy ride. That's just playing golf with some legends.
No, that is a fantasy. That's definitely something.
Oh, okay.
They're the two. But
I mean, that's... Once again, a slightly different gear to what you're about. I presume you are a golfer then, because that's a different type of headspace altogether.
Yeah.
And it can be just as mentally taxing, can't it?
But yeah, exactly. I love golf. It's great. And I'm so competitive with it. Like, same again. I don't want to lose. That's a bad day if I've lost.
Oh, my word. This has been fantastic. I've loved this. The insight that you've given us, there's even more so when it comes to racing, especially racing in this country.
It's been really interesting seeing your mindset, you know, away from the bike as well. What makes you relax? What makes you tick? And, you know, it's been lovely having you on, honestly. It's been brilliant.
No, thank you very much. It's great to share the time with two people that understand it from a different perspective. And we have had a great conversation and great questions and really, really enjoyed it, guys. Thank you.
We have as well, Ryan. Sadly, that's about it for this week's full chat, which is powered by Bike Show, of course. As UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, Bike Show will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your annual bike, scooter, or moped insurance, and so much more.
A huge thank you to everybody for listening, and a massive thank you to today's special guest. It's been absolutely insightful, inspirational. It's been brilliant. It's been very warm. I've enjoyed this one.
Yes.
It is, of course, Ryan Vickers. Thanks, Ryan.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I hope I can give you some insights of what it's like being a motorbike racer and, having it that goes on around it.
We've loved it, mate. Thank you so much for your time. All the very best for BSB as well. Don't forget to press the subscribe button on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from.
As ever, from Prots and myself, thank you very much for listening. Until next time, take care.